Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Folks, last week we discussed the Republican convention. This week we're going to discuss the Democratic convention and its aftermath.
The Democratic National Convention. Mike Cosentino here, Gary LeMaster over there, and
Steve Williamson.
Steve Williamson here. Yes.
All right.
One of the things I'd like to talk about is doing away with these really silly things altogether, but that would be another show.
Yes, that would be another show.
Doing away with the conventions altogether?
Yes, sir.
So we talked about the Republican convention and Donald Trump last week. Very, very, very strange. And so let's talk about the Democratic convention. Gary, you have some comparisons in terms of what the conventions were like, right? And then Mike will add a color commentary.
Well, there were at the RNC, the Republican convention, there were fewer than 6% of the delegates were minorities. At the Democratic convention.
You mean they let 6% in?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
At the Democratic convention, 50% were minorities.
Yeah, 5 out of 10.
At the RNC, there were zero presidents in attendance. They refused to attend. The hosting governor of the hosting state refused to attend. But at the DNC, there were three presidents who all spoke, and along with the governor of the hosting state. So quite a contrast.
How many speakers? It seems like there was 100 senators and congresspeople and governors and everything else.
Twice as many at the Democratic National Convention, 133 versus 71.
Wow.
They just couldn't get people to speak at the RNC, and everybody wanted to speak. And lots of history-making stuff. And an L.A. Times article, Jessica Ray's, the headline was just that. But we're talking about the first Native American woman, Peggy Flanagan. We're talking about the visible transgender everywhere at the DNC. We're talking about star power everywhere. We're talking about Republicans for Hillary, which is kind of a history-making, several history-making moments when you had Republican women for Hillary, where you have, and that's one of the things we want to talk about was the aftermath. The aftermath are all the Republicans, so many Republicans that are coming out for Hillary.
Well, for example, the Koch brothers, who run a whole bunch of different, I call them front organizations, had their meeting where they get all their billionaire friends together. And I guess they're having a fight about whether to support Trump or not. And the Kochs are not supporting Trump. They called... the possibility that he would support Hillary Clinton in the White House race, he called it blood libel. And they've scaled back their plans.
I don't know what that means, by the way.
Blood libel is a term usually used in Jewish reference to people who tell lies about Jews that get them murdered.
Oh, okay.
And he's taken that. He's taken that, and of course, German ancestry, he's taken that and used that over supporting a political candidate.
Which shows
you that for all the restraint and hiddenness of the Koch brothers, the extremism is really there. Yeah. Anyway, they're so unhappy with Trump, they've scaled back their investment in the presidential race. They're putting all their money into the Senate races. I think this is one fallout of both conventions, is that they've decided to put all their money in the Senate race. They'll be attacking Hillary Clinton in the Senate races and trying to tie all Democrats to it. That is, I saw one of the ads coming out of McCain, preposterous nonsense, but basically he's not running against Ann Kirkpatrick. He's running against Hillary Clinton as a sort of puppet master of Ann Kirkpatrick.
That's
which
really
is,
smart politics.
It's smart politics.
Don't do the ad, but it's really smart politics on their part. because Trump would be a disaster for business. If nothing else, these guys are businessmen. And so they still want a check and balance.
Well, the thing is, the thing about Trump that we talked about last week and when you were off was that he's kind of all over the place. He doesn't stick to their ideology of absolute free trade and so forth and so on. He's not a strict libertarian and so Trump is so egotistical, he's just sort of all over the place and says whatever he thinks is going to be popular at the moment.
At the Democratic National Convention, there were a list of stars that we're talking Meryl Streep, Elizabeth Banks, Sarah Silverman, Ted Danson, Mary Sternberg, Sedonin, I guess maybe they don't live here anymore, Mary Sternberg, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and of course you remember he's introduced himself as Michael Jordan because Trump wouldn't know the difference. Katy Perry, Sheila E., and on and on. They wanted to be there. They wanted to be at the Democratic National Convention.
What are you talking about? You know, the RNC had Chachi. You know, Chachi. Scott Bales.
Chachi. Well, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of a balance there, Mike.
You know, those conservative Italians, I don't know where they come from. My poor daughter thinks all Italians are liberal like me. And she finds out that Scalia and Alito
they had Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty. You know, I mean, they had the real A-listers.
Well,
there
you go.
The Republican convention was really doom and gloom, right? It was like America's falling apart. Everything is going bad. We're losing the war against ISIS or ISIL, whatever you want to call it. Everything disastrous is happening. The economy is in the crapper, and so forth and so on. The country's been badly led. Everything is terrible.
Well, that's what came out of the convention is a campaign slogan for the DNC, and that is this is not about Republican and Democrat. This is about reasonable and unreasonable. Gee, what somebody's been saying on this show for 5 years.
It was I actually watch more of a convention. My thing is I don't really watch TV,
Facebook page.
So I did watch a lot of the convention. It was really upbeat. It was a celebration of the new America, all the different religions, all the different races and ethnicities, and going forward into a new America and the strength of America as being based on the diversity of its people, all these different cultures bringing different values and different ideas and different energies into the American Republic. It's very different than what you saw at the Republican doom and gloom. So and it ends with people shouting, you know, USA, USA, which is a little disturbing.
I think it was what was really telling was the longtime conservative, traditional Republican commentators and pundits and columnists were actually envious of the DNC.
Yeah.
They wrote columns and made statements about how similar the Democratic convention was to the Morning in America convention of Ronald Reagan's in 1980s.
So it was really positive. In fact, I think probably people on the left are a little concerned about the enthusiastic nationalism that emerged from the Democratic convention. I mean, people were really, really upbeat. And
what's wrong with a little, you know, nationalism, a little patriotism? I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
That was one of these people who
think lie. I got a call from a friend, a retired cop, that said, "What's up with the Democrats being ashamed of the American flag?" And they did a great article on Snopes and everywhere else about how Fox had selectively aired scenes where there were no American flags, and then came out with that somehow Democrats were ashamed of the American flag.
I mean, there must have been 10,000 American flags waving.
Exactly. And Tim Kaine said, you know, it's at the end, after this brouhaha was all over, but this really got to people. That somehow that this would be true, that he said it's offensive to say that Democrats don't respect the American flag.
Republicans have long co-opted patriotism in the
yeah.
flag. You know, I was talking to one of our local candidates who is basically an independent, and he's been canvassing throughout Cottonwood and Sedona and elsewhere. And he said he can always tell when he's approaching a home on his list whether they're Republican or not, because if they're Republican, they have a flag out. Right, and right. And so there's this, you know, in my view, kind of false display of patriotism that's co-opted, you know, the flag and patriotism as being partisan.
I think we want to make sure that we don't always say that displaying the American flag is a good idea.
You're right.
There's nothing wrong with
it. It's gotten the country began to get polarized about the flag way back in the 60s. Now, what happened at the Democratic Convention is that the Democrats looked like the flag-waving guys, the positive stuff about America, and the Republicans looked like, I don't know, a pit of doom and gloom. What's going on?
Well, guys? I want to talk about the Pew Research Center. A friend of mine posted on his Facebook page the other day about how some of the things that he'd been posting he had found to be untrue, and because there's so many from what he thought were reliable sources. So he's being much, much, much more careful this season about posting things because there's so much falsehood out there. There's so many lies out there. I wanted to take you folks to the Pew.
Somebody must have a computer-generated lie machine somewhere.
Oh, they do. They have paid people. The word troll has become part of our language, and we're not talking about Billy Goat Gruff here. We're talking about those people that go to liberal and progressive websites, and vice versa, by the way, so they tell me, and post inaccurate yet opposite information. Pew Research Center, folks, you want some real data, you want some honest data collection about who we are as a people, who the United States is as a people, what our opinions are, go to Pew. And they say 31%. For the first time, 31% of our electorate will be minority. That's Asian, Black, Hispanic, and other. So we got a third of people out. Go to any. I've been in a couple of hospitals recently. Really diverse populations. Go to restaurants in Phoenix. Really, really diverse populations.
So this Democratic Convention was a celebration of diversity. All right, I'm going to read some speakers, and you guys maybe can tell me which you thought was the most powerful speech. We had Michelle Obama. Wow, that was one of the most powerful speeches.
Yeah.
We had Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
We had Bill Clinton, who still knows how to turn out his speech.
When he said, one of the things, once again, that I've been saying, the cartoon image, and he used the word cartoon image of Hillary, that the other side presents is laughable if so many people didn't believe it. You know, if there's a criticism I have of the Democrats, it's that they don't respond, and maybe they have no time to respond because there's so many attacks from the right that are laughable and untrue. And yet, when I go to my coffee shop, which I don't go as much lately, and I may be avoiding for the rest of this election season, they believe it. They'll believe any terrible thing. I don't care what it is, how bad it is, whether it's personal, professional, if it's about Hillary, it's true.
So what Bill Clinton did was really talk about their relationship and how they met and about the Hillary he knows, which is I only know one person who's actually knows her, and that dovetails. She's a very funny, lively, very, very smart lady.
Yeah.
And somehow that doesn't get across in public. So we had Bill Clinton talking about her as a person. We had Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire New York media giant, denouncing Donald Trump.
Well, the quote, I put that out, the quote from Bloomberg was, "I'm a New Yorker. I know a con man when I see one." I want to have that tattooed on my forehead.
A Republican mayor of New York a couple of times. Then we had Tim Kaine, who is the vice presidential candidate. What did you think of Tim Kaine's talk, Gary?
I thought it was okay. I don't think he's a dynamic speaker, and never has been. He's a really fine man. He was a missionary in Central America. He speaks fluent Spanish. He's began as a city council member, I believe,
an advocate of civil rights in Virginia,
and worked his way up to governor and then to the Senate. And he's really well liked in his home state, but I don't think anyone would ever confuse him with Barack Obama as a speaker.
Well, he was sandwiched in between Joe Biden, right, and Barack Obama, which is not a great place to be a speaker.
But he had
a whole different energy, much more informal, much more waving to people, talking to people, waving to people he knew in the audience. And joking. He made a lot of good points, but he did it in a very casual way compared to the other
speakers. Well, let's be clear. She needed the electoral votes of Virginia. And so, and this is how a normal convention works. You select somebody that's, hits all the spots, or at least as many as you can. He's a man. He's going to deliver in Virginia. He's not going to outshine the president.
He was selected to help with Virginia. He's also known as a fine administrator and a nice man.
He was chosen for
the same reasons that Pence was chosen by Trump.
I'm not sure about that.
He was chosen because it was hoped he would bring evangelicals along with him.
Oh, that's right.
And Tim Kaine is considered, I guess, one of the best human beings in the Senate. I mean, he's considered just a wonderful person.
Sure.
He was sandwiched in again Biden. Now, I thought I'll ask you guys what you think. For me, Biden's speech was probably the strongest speech of the convention because he was very serious. I've never seen Joe Biden speak that well or be that serious. And people were starting to applaud some of the things he was saying about Trump, and he stopped them, over and over again.
They were booing.
Yeah, whatever. They were doing both. But the point is that he didn't want that. What he wanted was to get these things out. And I think the reason is, he didn't see this as a political speech, there's always a certain ambiguity and about political speeches.
A certain carnival atmosphere, and he certainly was not feeling like very carnival.
He really, really does not like Trump, and he really thinks Trump is a danger to the United States.
Yeah.
And he sort of stopped doing his usual Joe Biden guy stuff, and he just laid into Trump directly. And seriously, as if his opposition to Trump transcends normal politics. I was stunned by it. I've never seen him speak so well.
I'd like to talk about the First Lady's speech that was highly politicized immediately afterwards by Bill O'Reilly and some of the Fox and the ultra-right wing pundits. She said during her speech that she wakes up every morning in a house built by slaves, which is an absolute fact. The White House was built.
But according to Bill O'Reilly, they're well-fed, well-housed slaves. They were hired.
Man, oh,
you
man.
Hire slaves? I don't think so. Not directly, anyway.
It was absurd. His response and the response of the right wing was absolutely absurd when it comes to calling slaves well fed and they're still slaves. I thought that was a really powerful.
Why do you think he did that, Gary? I mean, what's driving? I mean, that he should have just let that pass. Obviously, the slaves helped build the White House. There's no argument about it. It's just a fact. And why did he have to deny it by talking about how they were well fed?
It's just another example of trying to tear down the Obamas. And I think it's another example of racism. And I think it's a way to counter what was a very powerful speech.
They were desperate to belittle that in any way they could.
What speech did you like the best, Mike? Did you get us to listen to most of the convention?
I liked. Don't put me on a spot like that.
I'm sorry.
I'm an aftermath guy. I'm the pundit guy. I like listening Because in today's politics, it doesn't matter what anybody says. It only matters how people perceive what they say and how they interpret.
But isn't the main fallout from the convention what's been going on, the speech by Khan, whose son was killed in Iraq, a Muslim officer, captain, was killed in Iraq?
That was by far the most powerful speech in my view. And
without a doubt. When it comes to the politicians, it's hard for me to, I met Biden and during the 08 cycle. And, two old lefties, the earth shook a little bit down in Phoenix.
But he's a kind of informal guy.
He's a very informal guy. That's why I like him.
He's a blue-collar kind of guy.
And that's what I thought his speech was, very formal and very serious. I haven't seen him in that mode. But let's talk about what happened when Khan got up and talked about the death of his son. His son was apparently had a lot of relations, or he was trying to talk to people in the area. They were in Iraq. And what happened, Gary?
Well, it's his son was the speaker was Khazir Khan with his wife, and they're Muslim immigrants, and their oldest son was 2 years old when they came into the U.S. And as soon as he was able, he joined the Marines and rose to captain, and while in Iraq. His unit was being approached by a truck with a suicide bomb. And he ordered his men away from the path of the truck and then took 10 steps towards the truck to try to stop it and make sure it wasn't a suicide bomb, and it blew up and killed him. And so his parents went after Trump's, call for keeping Muslims out of the country and tracking Muslims. And he ended the speech by holding up a pocket copy of the Constitution and asking if Trump has ever read the Constitution, which, by the way, I don't think he has until now. And
he certainly didn't have the number of articles correct.
Then
he thought it was 2 Corinthians.
Well,
or something.
A lot of his proposals have been blatantly unconstitutional. But anyway, Khazir Khan held up the Constitution and said that asked if Trump had ever read the Constitution. If not, you're welcome to borrow my copy. It was an incredibly powerful moment.
What did Trump do?
Trump's response was to attack the Khans by saying that the mother just stood there, didn't say a word. So it was obviously, part of the religion that women aren't allowed to speak in public. And the mother later was on a interview program and said that it was much too emotional for her to speak, that she every time she sees her son's picture, like it was projected behind them at the convention, she has trouble keeping from breaking down in tears. So then Trump went after them again, because that talking point was taken away. So then he said, well, yeah, they've made sacrifices, but I've made sacrifices too. I've built big buildings. I've hired people. It was like totally inconsistent. And
well, it's emotionally and psychologically inconsistent too. I mean, you'd think a more rational person would have just let it pass, because it was a devastating terror. If he wants to be prejudiced against Muslim, then he has to face the fact that we have a Muslim officer who died for this country. That's that. And his parents are not happy at being stigmatized by Donald Trump.
And to his credit, yesterday, John McCain took time out from his hate-mongering campaign and his attack ads against Ann Kirkpatrick to make a very powerful statement in support of the Khans, and basically attacking, without naming him, attacking Trump's comments.
The press, the main fallout from the press has been about Trump's exchange with the Khans,
right?
Right, about their son and about Muslims being patriotic and so forth and so on.
I want to read
that
what
seems
Khan
a said. Bad takeaway for him. I don't know.
I want to read what Khan said. He said, "Let me ask you: have you read the U.S. Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy." He pulls it out. In this document, look at the words "liberty" and "equal protection of law." Have you been to the Arlington Cemetery? Go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending the United States of America. You will see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. You have sacrificed nothing and no one. We cannot solve our problems by hope building walls, sowing divisions. We are stronger together, is what Khmer said, what the father of the slain soldier said too at the convention. And then we have sacrificed nothing. And then what does Trump say?
I've sacrificed a lot. I built buildings and hired people.
It was a lot of work to get those five deferments for bone spurs and that didn't keep him from playing athletics in college. By the
way, other thing that's come out after the Republican convention, I guess, and after the Democratic convention, is questions about Donald Trump's relationship with Putin and Russia and the suspicion that one reason he will not release his taxes is that Russian oligarchs have been funding a lot of his recent developments, and he doesn't want that visible. What's the name of his campaign manager, Manafort?
Paul Manafort, who was a campaign manager for the presidential campaign in Ukraine for a pro-Russian candidate. Who has and Manafort has long ties into the Russian hierarchy and the oligarchy.
Strange deals, economic deals, and all kinds of things. So that's come up, and Trump's denied he even knows Putin.
Well, Trump, you know, just to you know go further, Trump made an ill-advised investment in a mansion in Florida, and couldn't get anybody to buy it, and he was bailed out by a Russian billionaire oligarch who, you know, gave Trump, for no apparent reason, a $5 million profit on the home.
Oh, he just basically gave, that's the old-fashioned way of you don't hand the guy $5 million, you hand him a deal where he makes $5 million that he wouldn't otherwise make? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and Trump has long admired and stated his admiration for Putin and other strongmen. Then the other issues is, as I think we mentioned last week, Trump has had difficulties getting banks to invest in his developments and his company in the U.S. So the story is, and I believe it to be true, that he is gotten investments from Russian billionaires, and to put it plainly, all of the billionaires in Russia are friends of Putin. Billionaires
the rest
because
of, them
of
been
Putin.
Murdered or they fled the right. country.
There's a lot of comparison with Donald Trump and Joe McCarthy. There's another website, and this is
that's unfair to Joe McCarthy.
Article picked up today in the Washington Post from a website called The Reality-Based Community, a guy named Harold Pollack compares Kazir with a guy named Joseph Welch, which is one of the first people to call out McCarthy back at his time. And now is there – I don't know. I think as time goes by, I mean, the headlines are daily with Trump's gaffes, with his racism, with his incomplete foreign policy ineptitude. We're supposed
ignorance,
to be talking about
right,
the DNC,
Mike,
but we somehow got back to talking about Trump again. Because they did a lot of that at the DNC.
Yes, they did.
I felt up until the Democratic National Convention, Democrats were held back. Yeah. There was so much, but they let it all out, speaker after speaker.
They were very, very blunt. Some of the bluntest talk. I think the reason is that somebody said that this is not a race between Republicans and Democrats. This is a race between normal and abnormal person. And I think that people are beyond the normal politics of politics, you might say. People are really concerned about Trump as a person. And I think, yeah, I would say the speaking was about half of visions of where they wanted to go. In the platform, they want a $15 minimum wage, so forth and so on.
You question Trump's character when his response to the speakers was to say, I was so furious. I wanted to hit him. I wanted to hit him so hard that their heads would spin.
That's right. You know,
it's
childish.
Very presidential, I think.
I just don't know. But it, apparently, work. You know what? When he insulted McCain, the Republicans went, okay, we'll vote for him anyway.
Don't you think a lot of the support for Trump are people that just want to shake things up?
Yes.
They don't care if he's a good president or
right.
a terrible president. They just want to shake things up and send a message.
He's a bomb. You throw the bomb into the system, it goes off, and you see what happens.
They're not worrying about what will happen when the bomb goes off. They just want to see everybody scurry when it lands. That's
There's right. a big division between the in the Republican convention. You see people who want to go back basically to the 50s, to white America, men ran things, and that was pretty much that. It wasn't really as homogeneous as the vision of it is. The vision of it is false because we were already had immigrants from all over the world there. We had people from everywhere, all different cultures and religion. But they want to go back to that leave it to Beaver kind of vision.
In the days
America.
Of Jim Crow.
Right.
Right.
Well, but the Democratic Convention wants to move ahead with the America that we have, and we'll get to be
and improve it.
Yeah.
I think we'd be remiss if I'd like to get your guys' opinions on the beginning of the convention, because I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the events that led up to it, the battle between the Bernie supporters and the Clinton supporters and the Russian, what now appears to be in the government, the FBI says is a hack of the DNC by Russian hackers.
19,000 emails were released by WikiLeaks. Right.
Right. And then,
before the convention in order to damage Hillary Clinton.
And then just not to jump ahead, but then the Trump statement during the convention that he hopes that the Russians are listening. And that they, if they have access to Hillary's private emails that were on her server that were, not turned over to the government because they were private, they were gone over by government, officials. If somebody has access to those, then I hope Russia, releases those so we can all see.
Okay, but what was in those 19,000 emails? My impression is that you found that there was a lot of support in the DNC and a prejudice in favor of Hillary Clinton. But there was no big revelations in there. There was no big scandal. I mean, it was just mostly people talking to each other in the kind of frank way we talk when we're not in public. It was kind of like it fell flat. There wasn't anything much there except the one thing, which was never done, which they said, one guy said, well, we should bring out the fact that Bernie Sanders is an atheist instead of being Jewish. Yeah. That was it. They never acted on it. Never happened. That was the worst thing in the entire 19,000 emails.
That's a great point, Steve. And that's exactly right. It was the act of it and was greater than anything, and there was no content, there was no there, yet once again, not that this is a surprise when it comes to the Republican Party or its nominee, that there was no there, that it didn't have the impact. There was no, nefarious, there was bias, but no plot against...
I think that's exactly accurate. There was bias reflected by a lot of the individuals in the DNC. I mean, Hillary Clinton has been part of the Democratic Party for decades. Sanders, for all of his ability, has kind of shunned being a Democrat until he decided to run for president. So you just sort of expect politics and human beings, they'd want to support the guy who's been with them rather than the new guy. That's unfortunate because they should rigorously be neutral. That's what they should do, be rigorously neutral.
Well, there were complaints, not just from the Sanders camp, but from the O'Malley and Chafee camps about the debate schedule and so on. So there was likely some bias. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was the DNC chair, had been, I think, if I'm not mistaken, chair of Hillary's campaign in 2008.
I think the bias was the way they set up, and this is something we can talk about even maybe on another show, about how they set up debates. So if you're the leader or the incumbent, you want to have as few debates as possible if you're leading, right? If you get, and if you're an insurgent, and you want to, then you want to have as most debates
as many
possible.
As possible, yeah.
So you saw that in both the Republican and the Democratic Party. Bernie wants more debates. Trump wants more debates. Cruz wants more debates. Bush wants less debates.
An absurd number of debates. I don't care.
Both sides, yes.
Yeah, both sides. No more debates.
The scandal, right? The scandal now is that a year ago, the nonpartisan commission set up these dates for the vice president and presidential debates in the fall. And they set them up a year ago. And then the NFL set football games against the debates.
Good strategy.
And Trump.
I know where I'll be.
Trump thinks this is a giant conspiracy.
Well, he claimed to have received a letter from the NFL complaining about the debate schedule. The NFL, however, responded by saying, "We have sent no such letter."
When the debates were. They should have thought about setting the football games up so they're not running against the debates, right?
Which I want to point out is just fits in with the entire Trump campaign
that he lied. Get that word out.
He lied. If you go to politifact.com, go to factcheck.org, go to Snopes, and there are two or three other fact checking organizations that are impartial. Trump has set records for the number of lies told by a presidential candidate.
Okay, Gary, get your point, but here's what you said earlier.
21 in his acceptance speech alone.
Yeah. Here, let's go back to your earlier point that people are supporting Trump because they basically want to smash the system, throw a bomb into the system and break things up. Are they going to care the fact that he's the most lying candidate we've ever had in the United States?
Obviously they don't, because they've been supporting him through the whole campaign. He's been lying. It's not like he just decided to lie yesterday or with the RNC convention. He's been lying. You know, he's got more pants on fire judgments by PolitiFact than any other candidate.
What's your big takeaway from the convention, Mike, if you had to sum it up?
Well, I'm just going to go back to the slogan. When you talk about normal, abnormal, you talk about reasonable, unreasonable. And that is what we're going to hear for the next couple of months until the convention, is that the difference between my biggest takeaway would have been this nation that's struggling together, that's imperfect, and yet that our biggest threat isn't Muslims, our biggest threat isn't foreign, our biggest threat is the Republican Party.
I think one of the things I liked in the Democratic platform, and I hope that they're really serious about it, is the expansion of Social Security, because so few people have pensions now. Almost nobody has what they call defined pensions, which is a guaranteed stuff. They have the 401ks and all this sort of stuff. But a lot of people have no pensions at all. Social Security has to be improved and increased, and we've talked about how you can do that, and it's not a big deal. You just raise the ceiling on what gets taxed, and you're there.
It's probably for another show, but the short version is that the IRA and the 401k were created as supplements to defined benefit pension plans that have all been taken away. But as soon as that legislation was passed, creating the IRA and the 401k, then that gave license to corporations to start doing away with defined benefit pension plans.
Part of the platform would ban private prisons, something we've had how many programs over the years, the scandals of private prisons. Lots of good stuff there. What's your main takeaway from the, you listened to both conventions, almost all of them.
Right.
Right.
And on C-SPAN, by the way.
On C-SPAN.
So I didn't have
I
wasn't influenced by the pundits.
And
Fox News Channel, when they were covering the DNC, they, instead of airing, Khazir Khan's speech, about his hero son, Marine, they cut away to a commercial for attacking Hillary on Benghazi, and then came back from that to replaying the Katy Perry performance. So they even refused to air powerful speech of, in my view, of the whole convention.
And they just disappeared him.
Yes, I think my takeaway is that after a raucous beginning of the convention, I think that the people, the delegates, for the most part, pulled together to support Hillary. I think it was a very positive vision of America going forward with good plans. If you take just the economic plans of Hillary versus her opponent, Moody's, which is an impartial, service, said that her plan would create 10 million jobs over the next 4 years. And at the same time, they looked into Trump's plan, which would eliminate 3.5 million jobs over the same time period.
Mike, you want to sum up your thoughts? We got 3 minutes.
The recklessness, of Donald Trump, there's almost no telling what the impact could be. The recklessness of Joe McCarthy was extremely damaging, damaging to individuals, damaging to the nation at large. Trump's recklessness, The Guardian newspaper in England says that his penchant for going off script, like it or hate it, our politicians have messages to send that reflect their various parties and positions. Trump goes off script like a child and insists that his intellect...
A spoiled brat,
that his ideas are more powerful than the collective wisdom of the Republican Party. That alone... So that's the difference. Whether you like it or not, the DNC is politicians, yes, sir. But the recklessness of Trump is contrasted hugely.
And I think one reason that so many Republicans are not supporting him and why they didn't show up for the Republican convention, because they can't believe he got their presidential nomination. And I remember Joe Biden's speech stuck with me because I realized how serious he was and how really worried for the country he was that someone like Trump would be elected president. And I don't think there was any game playing. I don't think there was any ambiguity. It was a very different Joe Biden than I'd seen before, because people are seriously concerned about the threat that Trump's all over the place, charming all over the place, attacking people, thin-skinnedness will really mess things up.
A quick shout-out to the Democrats of the Red Rocks for helping to support our program. Their next meeting is coming up on Thursday, August 18th, at 8 a.m. at the old Sedona Bar and Grill, and it's going to feature a forum of the Sedona City Council candidates.
That's
always well attended, by the way, at the old Sedona Bar and Grill right there across from Whole Foods.
And you can always eat all the stuff that you don't let yourself eat the rest of the month. You can load down the bacon and stuff.
That's right. The Democrats serve a traditional breakfast, I may add. And don't forget, you can catch this show on VVID.org and all our shows. And don't forget that Chasm is streamed live on TuneIn. If you're not near your car radio, please go to TuneIn, find chasm.com. Please find us at vvic.org.
VVID.
VVID. VVID. Vivid. No, VVID.
No.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.